Okay, so let's get cracking. Are you able to see this, the screen share?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, great. Excellent. Okay, wonderful. So welcome back, everyone. We've been on something of a hiatus because of Yontif and all of that, and also because we were doing Hilchos Pesach, obviously, in advance of Yontif. But let's get back to Shabbos. And what I would like to do, try to cover the next number of, probably the next number of months, really, is trying to take a look at Muktzah. Muktzah is one of the more complicated and involved areas of Hilchos Shabbos. And yet, it is one of the most eminently practical. It's something that we literally bump into throughout every Shabbos. Invariably, there are items that we wish to move, don't know if we necessarily can move them, how we go about moving them. I wanted to really start, I guess, really start this entire unit, if you will, in probably the most obvious location, but then immediately move on to a less obvious location. What I'd like to try to tackle tonight is first and foremost an introduction, so we have some sort of handle on the reason for which we actually have such a concept as Muktzah to begin with. So I'd like to take a look at the Rambam, who gives some measure of introduction to this entire realm of Hilchos Shabbos, and then move on really to what usually comes sort of at the tail end, I guess, of any conversation about any realm of halacha, are what are the exceptions to the rule. So I wanted to try to tackle the exceptions tonight, because I think that before we really get going and before we get too involved in all the technical dimensions of different categories of muktzah, what sort of types of muktzah are there, what falls into what category and why, and what are the specific reasons and specific halachos and specific laws that govern any given area, I think more than that, probably just as a to create the fallback position and to create the safety net before we really get going, to know when is it permissible to move at least most types of muktzah in most types of settings, and to sort of know that even if I haven't figured out all the details and I don't really know the rest yet, so I'll know that on any given Shabbos, until we actually get to that point, I'll be able to move what I need to move in the fashion that would be mutter. So let's start off with the more obvious place to start, which is why muktzah? Why muktzah? So I want to take a look at a couple of halachos in the Rambam, back-to-back halachos. It's worth noting in the first place that if we are asking the question why this specific area of Hilchos Shabbos, so then obviously what we're dealing with, and this is true according to most, what we're dealing with is a derabanan. What we're dealing with is not a halacha da'oraisa, it's not a mitzvah da'oraisa, it's not a malacha da'oraisa. This isn't part of Shabbos da'oraisa. It's not part of Shabbos on a Torah level. It's part of Shabbos on a rabbinic level. If it wasn't part of Shabbos on a rabbinic level, it would obviously be much more difficult to spend too much time pontificating about why, because it would just be, I don't know, because, you know, the Torah says so, is what most or the average mitzvah d'oraisa ultimately boils down to. Here we can get into, I don't know if it's so much the psychology, the culture, or the backdrop, the historical backdrop, and some of the considerations that were actually present at the time that Chazal initially instituted muktzah. And I think not only is that going to give us some historical backdrop, but also give us a bit of a feel and a flavor for what muktzah is supposed to be. Will help us to understand why it is that there might be certain exceptions, but also helps to sort of frame Shabbos. Shabbos is one of those things that comes with this whole atmosphere, this whole environment, and this whole feeling and sense of what Shabbos is supposed to be. And sometimes, maybe this is a little counterintuitive, but sometimes the way that we're able to develop a framework, a hashkafic framework, is by taking a look at some of the individual points and deriving from them what exactly the thought process is in this being part of the general rubric. And that helps you extrapolate some of the broader themes. When you just have the broad themes, it's hard to necessarily figure out exactly what that means all the time. But sometimes when you actually see it in practice, it can be very, very helpful. So that's what we have with muktzah. So the Rambam explains why it is that muktzah came about, why it is that they were interested in establishing muktzah to begin with. So this is in Perek Chav Dal. This is Perek Chav Dal of Hilchos Shabbos. This is really towards the end, because the Rambam spends the Prakim before dealing with some of the other dimensions of Shabbos, the D'oraisa dimensions of Shabbos, not entirely, but to some degree. So let's take a look at Halacha Yud Beis. Asru Chachamim L'taltel Miktas Devarim B'Shabbos. If you can see me, I'm right at the top line here. So the Chachamim prohibited Tiltul, and Tiltul is the way that usually it's referred to actually in the Lashon of Chazal. We use the term Muktzah, really it's Muktzah, Muktzah really refers to the dimension of these objects really being set aside. We don't only speak about, it's amazing. Muktzah has become just such a cat. It's like I hear my kids doing it. I remember me and my friends doing it when we were kids also. Muktzah becomes this catch-all, which means in the parlance of, you know, eight-year-olds, it's usher to do on Shabbos. Usher to do on Shabbos, pulling out grass. Muktzah, turning on a flame. Muktzah, shechting an animal in the backyard. It's muktzah. Those things aren't muktzah. Those things are usher. They're malacha. They are a demonstration, and they're engaging with malacha, with constructive labor on Shabbos. It's not muktzah. What muktzah really is just this, that the Rambam describes, how it is asru chachamim l'taltel mitzas devarim, that you're not allowed to move certain items. The inability to move what I want wherever I want, if that applies to any given item, we say that that item is muktzah, that it is set aside. It's reserved for non-Shabbos use, at least predominantly, said I'm not allowed to move it on Shabbos. So why did the Chachamim do that? Why is it that they said the Asur Chacham l'taltel mitzas dvarim b'Shabbos, that they said you're not allowed to be mitaltel, can't move? So again, muktzah means it's set aside, it's reserved. L'taltel really means to move, or the inability to move. We speak about tiltul b'Shabbos, moving things on Shabbos is often the way that Chazal refer to it. K'derech shahu osa b'chol, that you're not allowed to do it the way that you do it during the week. During the week, I don't have to be conscious of what I'm moving from point A to point B. I can move my computer, I can move my cell phone, I can move a pen and pencil, I can move whatever I want, box of matches, whatever you like. And on Shabbos, aside from doing anything that would be construed as malacha, as actual work, it's also usher to even move these things. Why did they say so? Why is it that they established this halacha? Amru, they said, Uma in his hiru neviim. If the Nevi'im determined, meaning so in an even earlier generation, we have this from the words of the Nevi'im. We'll quote the pasuk in a minute. If the Nevi'im saw fit, that the way that you carry yourself, your comportment on Shabbos should not be like your comportment during the week. The way that you carry yourself and your behavior during the week should be different from the way that you carry yourself on Shabbos. And that expresses itself, even that the way that you speak, the way that you speak on Shabbos should be different from the way that you speak during the week, that we're allowed to speak about whatever we want during the week, again, within the parameters beyond Lashon Hara and all of that. But there's no subject matter specifically that I'm not allowed to talk about. I can talk about business, I can talk about money, I can talk about work, I can talk about labor, talk about whatever I want during the week. The Nevi'im said that if that be the case, then you shouldn't speak that way on Shabbos. Shenemar, as the Pasuk in Yeshaya says, Vidaber Davar. One of the items that you need to refrain from, withhold your, hold yourself back from doing on Shabbos is daber davar, just speaking about whatever you want, and all kinds of different halachos that that flesh out this principle and that govern what it is that you're allowed to speak about on Shabbos, permitted to speak about on Shabbos, what you're not permitted to speak about on Shabbos. Kav chomer, all the more so, shalo yeh tiltul b'Shabbos ketiltul b'chol. All the more so, therefore, said the Chachamim, the reason the Chachamim, that whatever you move about and carry on Shabbos, that seems like an even greater act of engagement in the world around you, and therefore, and it speaks to one's actual behavior to an even greater degree, what it is that I'm carrying and moving about. So therefore, you carry and move about on Shabbos should be different from what you carry and move about during the week. Why? Kedei shelo yikeh kiyom chol be'enav, so that you not start to view Shabbos like just a yom chol, like it's a weekday. This is so interesting. I mean, we take this for granted, but appreciate that as you're starting to build this from the ground up, that we've seen this, you know, before in other sources, that there's a sense that Shabbos is supposed to be something more than just a day when we don't do 39 arbitrary acts or arbitrary types of constructive labor. I don't mean arbitrary in the sense that obviously nothing HaKadosh Baruch, whoever commands, is just arbitrary, but that's what it would feel like. What we equate, which if you had to describe Shabbos to somebody who didn't know anything about Shabbos, Jew, non-Jew, somebody who nothing about Shabbos, the way that we would go about doing so likely pertains more to the kinds of things that, for one, strictly speaking, may not even be governed by halacha at all. But even beyond that, even if they are governed by halacha, likely fall into those categories of halacha that are only asur midrabanan, only asur on a rabbinic level, not on a de'oraisa level. We would talk about, Shabbos is so wonderful, it's a day of rest, and we're able to sort of enjoy a mellow kind of atmosphere in our homes. And it's a time for togetherness. It's a time when we get together with friends and with relatives and with family members, and nobody's busy and nobody's running anywhere. We make a point of blocking off the whole day, and we go to shul and we pray together and we eat together, and you can stroll and you just relax and you don't go to work and you don't think about work, you know, talk about work, and it's just a complete severance from everything. Right? Like Joe Lieberman's book about how what it was like to keep Shabbos throughout his political career. And I mean, he touches on Malacha, but the way that that book really, really drops, the way it feels is that it's like, it's a day of rest. This is becoming popular as like a digital Sabbath, right? Like put down the phone and just sever, distance yourself from technology for one day a week. This is what the Rambam really is driving at, that Shabbos is meant to be apparently more. It's supposed to be Malacha. It's supposed to be a refraining from Malacha, but it's supposed to be refraining from Malacha plus. There's supposed to be an atmosphere, an avira, a sense, a feeling of what Shabbos is supposed to be beyond just that I refrain from these particular activities. So therefore, again, that the way in which I carry myself during the week shouldn't be the way that I carry myself on Shabbos, because otherwise, shelo yeke yom chol ba'inav, so that it doesn't end up that Shabbos ends up just being like a weekday in your eyes. Even though it's true, I'm still refraining from all the malacha. But okay, so like I went this way and that way, and I swerved my way around the cones, and I didn't actually knock over any of those any of the hazards. I avoided all the pitfalls, but basically it felt like any other day. Like I went to work and I had somebody else write things down for me, but I went to work and I hooked up all the Grumma switches and everything, and I took public transportation. I didn't actually do any malacha. I didn't actually get into the car. I didn't actually drive myself. It was the Uber. It was arranged before Shabbos. Amir La'akum, I did it with my neighbor, and then I went there, and then I came home, and whatever, it was primarily like any other day at the office. That's not what we want, and one of the things that helps us get there, says the Rambam, is muktza. If I can't so much, if I have to have the degree of consciousness, right, consciousness and mindfulness and all that, so big right now, think about the degree of mindfulness that muktza implants in our minds and in our consciousness on Shabbos, that it's not enough that you not right. It's that I can't even move the pen. Every time before I move, before I pick up, before I touch effectively anything, I need to first wonder, ponder, is this something that has purpose, doesn't have purpose? If it doesn't have purpose on Shabbos, then effectively it's out of my realm. It's out of my sphere of influence on Shabbos as well. So he says, furthermore, what are you going to end up doing all day long? Even if you don't do malach, you're going to pick up all your stuff. You're going to rearrange, right? Like, Susan, you're going to like rearrange your office, right? You just rearrange your office. So Allah, you deck the walls, whatever you're going to do, that's all absent malacha. But I think about, let me restructure, let me move the furniture around, let me move this thing to there and that thing to here, right? Furniture is probably, strictly speaking, not muktzah. But if you can engage in those kinds of things, then all of Shabbos is wasted on being like a day to clean out the garage. I didn't malacha chas v'shalom. I didn't fill up the tires, and I didn't even put WD-40 on the chain, and I didn't do any actual malacha. But I moved my power tools around. I set up my workbench, and I got my workspace, and all of that, and then it just feels like any other day. Omi bias labias. I take it out from this house to my neighbor's house. I return stuff. Spring cleaning. Put stuff out from the garage into the shed, and from the shed into the living room, and whatever. Olatznia avanim, or to start stashing stones aside, to start stashing firewood aside, v'chayotze behen, all these kinds of activities. Sharei hu batel v'yoshev b'veso, he's just sitting around doing nothing in his home. V'ivakesh davar shi'as asek bon, he's looking for something to do. V'nimtza shelo shavas. And then what ends up happening is that he's not shavas. Ubitel hatam she'anemar b'Torah l'ma'an yanuach, so that you be at rest. It's so interesting, by the way, this last line of the Rambam. And I don't really apologize. I know this is a lot of kind of like hashkafic background. I think it's all important and helps to kind of frame what Shabbos is all about, even and it helps for all the halachos to stick. But it's so interesting that the Rambam says, what's the concern? The concern is that if we give you the ability to clean up, if we give you the opportunity to arrange your power tools, if we give you the opportunity to stack firewood in your garage, you know what that would end up meaning? Look at this. Sharei hu batel v'yoshev b'veso. He'll end up being batel. He'll end up doing nothing. And we don't want him to do nothing. We want him to have Shabbos. Now, how counterintuitive is that? That's like the exact opposite of the way that I would describe Shabbos. You know what we want to happen on Shabbos? We want you to do nothing. And therefore, we need to remove any possible activity that you might engage in. We want you to do nothing, and we can't have you be doing something on Shabbos. The Rambam puts it in the exact opposite manner. He says that the problem with being able to stack firewood, you know what stacking firewood is? Stacking firewood is yoshev u'batel. It's nothingness. It's unproductive. You know what it would mean if we give you the opportunity to just to clean up and do spring cleaning and to clean out the garage and put everything back the way you want? That would be yoshev u'batel. What we're looking for is Shabbos. What we're looking for is menucha. And therefore, if we would allow you to be batel, to do nothing, like cleaning out the garage, nothingness, vanity, things that don't make any difference, things that don't really matter, you know what would end up happening? In the end, you wouldn't actually have lema'an yanuach, that you should be at rest. Menucha is active. Menucha takes work. Menucha is not the absence of all other activity. Menucha is something that we actually create. It's an atmosphere of calm, of tranquility, of not just calm, but of rejuvenation, of revitalization, of a refreshing kind of quality to the day. That's something that needs to be constructed. It needs to be activated, and only when we're active do we actually achieve it. It's an amazing way that the Rambam actually formulates what Shabbos is supposed to look like, what it's not supposed to look like, in a very counterintuitive sort of way. What we would consider to be active, the Rambam says, that's yoshev u'batel, you're not doing anything important. What we think of, oh, what should Shabbos be? Shabbos should be nothing, just being completely at rest. Not really. You should create a vibe of rest, of reflection, of rejuvenation. And that's something that actually requires creativity, requires your engagement, requires your action on your part. And that's really what we're trying to achieve. Hence, we remove all of those items that are muktzah. If they're removed from the playing field, that helps to narrow the focus and allows us to stay focused on what the actual task at hand really is every single Shabbos. So number one is we want to create a Shabbos-dik atmosphere. Whatever exactly that looks like, it's not going to involve things that really have nothing to do with Shabbos. It can't be that what Shabbos expects of me, Shabbos demands of me, is to fiddle around with my power tools, even if I don't actually turn them on, because I'm not allowed to use them. So that's not the point. The point is create the proper Shabbos vibe, and removing the ability to move muktzah helps to create that. Further, says the Rambam Halachi Gimel, va'od, furthermore, k'sheyevaker v'yatatel kelim, shemalachtan la'iser, if a person would be allowed to move those sorts of things, whose primary purpose, at least, is usher on Shabbos, then you're playing with fire. Quite literally, you could be playing with fire. Efshar she is asik bahen ma'at, it could be that you'll end up using them a little bit. V'yavu l'dei malacha. You know what's going to happen if we allow you to, let me sort out the blue pens from the black pens. Every now and again, I got to do like a purge of, we got one of these situations, you know, like in the kitchen. And you know, it's like, so the kids color and then some markers end up there instead of something like that. And then like the pens get shattered, somebody's chewing on the back of the pen and the erasers fall off the pencil. And I don't know, I feel like everybody has some version of this in their home. So every now and again, you got to do like a purge of the pen holder. Which pen still works? You take out a piece of paper, you do a little jot. Does it still work? Is it disgusting? Is it, you know, is it, does it have coronavirus all over it? Should we throw it out? Does it have rabies? Whatever. You know, what do you throw out and what do you keep? Why can't I just spend my time doing that on Shabbos? Shabbos, I got hours, especially now, no shul. I got hours on end looking for things to do on Shabbos. What a great project. What a great activity. The Rambam says, give me a break. You start fiddling around with the pens. You start sorting the blue from the black and the markers from the crayons and the crayons from the pencils and the pencils from the pens. Give me a break. At some point, you're going to end up writing. You're going to forget yourself and you're holding something that is used only for something that is malacha. You're going to end up doing that malacha on Shabbos. So really, reason number two. One is creating the general atmosphere of Shabbos. Number two, a genuine, more direct, more pointed concern that you might end up actually performing malacha on Shabbos as well. Va'od, and furthermore, mipnei shemiktas ha'am einam ba'alei umanios. Because many people, there are a handful of people who aren't ba'alei umanios. They don't work. They don't have a real occupation. El b'teilim kol yimeyan. They sit around. They don't do anything all day long. Kagon hatayol, and people who just go on walks all day. V'yoshvei kranos, and they hang out in the bars and in the pubs. Shekol yimeyan hein shovsim mimalacha. Just all day long, they're never doing anything. They're just lounging and relaxing. They never they never commit to an honest day's work. uledaber uletaltel kishar hayamim, and if they would be around, if they would be able, if they would be given license to act on Shabbos the same way that they do during the week, or meaning to say, if there would be nothing on Shabbos that's usher, and there would be nothing on Shabbos that's usher to move, and nothing on Shabbos that's usher to speak, and nothing on Shabbos that's usher to say, then nimtza shalosh shavas shvisa hanikeres. This is such an interesting issue for a couple of reasons. The Rambam says we have to manufacture some new sort of iser, because otherwise, for people who don't work, Shabbos looks just like the week. And that's a problem. Why is that a problem? It sort of comes back to the first reason, he says, but he's narrowing the focus on one particular group. He says, if you don't work and you're not engaged really in malacha, then there needs to be something, some sort of indicator on Shabbos itself that this is actually a different day, that this is a different day, this is a separate day, this is a holy day, this is a day that I refrain from doing the kinds of things that I do during the week. What if you don't do anything during the week? What if you don't do malacha? What if there are no power tools? What if there is no, maybe he's talking about me, right? He's talking about educators. I don't know. Susan, I think he's talking about us. What if you teach? So then, what are you doing all day long? You're not doing anything. You're just talking. It's all words. It's all conversation. And therefore, for those kinds of people, you need to ensure that there's something that ends up being different about Shabbos. That's interesting, by the way, in of itself. What is also interesting about that is that what the Rambam seems to be suggesting is that it is possible that Chazal, Nevi'im, whomever, would have legislated some enormous, far-reaching, wide-sweeping realm of halacha, would have legislated an entire realm and area of halacha upon it and foisted it upon the entire community, the entire nation, because of what he calls Mipnei Shemiktzas Ha'am, because there's a small percentage, there are a few people, there's some percentage of the population for whom Shabbos would look the same as during the week. Therefore, guess what? Everybody's chayiv and muktza now. It's really remarkable. It's really remarkable. There's something about like the idea of being nose ba'ol chavero, when kind of, listen, if this is your problem, then it's my problem too, and I'm going to carry the burden with you. We'll do it together. There's something very beautiful about all that. So that's what the Rambam says is happening here with respect to muktza, that for the sake of the few for whom Shabbos would look just like any other day, therefore let's make Shabbos even more restrictive. Everybody is going to have to abide by those additional restrictions. So he says, if they're allowed to go about like any other day, it doesn't even look like they've kept Shabbos at all. So therefore, refraining and resting from these things, this is something that becomes important for everybody. And the Rambam concludes that this effectively is why we created Muktzah. So that's a little bit of introduction, a few different reasons as to why Muktzah, how Muktzah, where Muktzah really comes from, at least initially. Let's spend some time talking about at least some of the initial exceptions to the rule. When would we say that muktza really doesn't apply? And this is, again, before we start delving into, and we will, but before we delve into different categories of muktza, what specifically is muktza? What's set aside? What are really not allowed to touch? For what reasons? Are there other exceptions that perhaps more limited to more specific cases? Just in very broad strokes, it's worth having a handle on the following, that very often, when we deal with indirect movement of muktza, that's actually mutter. And that when we speak about muktza and how there are things that you're not allowed to move, we're talking about, here's my phone. My phone is muktza because it's used to make calls and whatever. It's usher, an electronic device. So am I picking it up and moving it around and carrying it, even if I have good reason? Even if I don't know, I don't like it where it is. It's an eyesore, it's embarrassing, or because I'm afraid that one of the kids might pick it up, or might get ruined, might get damaged, wherever it is, I want to move it around. That might be, That is far more problematic, but when it comes to indirect movement, so that's something that's going to be far more mutter. Shulchan Aruch says in Shin Yud Aleph Halacha Hey, says in Tzarech L'Makom Hames. Now a mace, a dead body, is muktza on Shabbos. Can't bury it on Shabbos, and there's nothing really to do with the mace. He says though that if you need the place in which the mace actually is presently lying, presently residing. Or you need whatever it is that the mace is lying upon. You need that bed. You need that furniture. You need the space where the mace is presently resting. So this is the notion of indirect movement, to be metaltel min hatzad, to move from the side, not to move directly, not to actually pick up the mace, but to move indirectly. The hainu, for instance, shehofcho mimita lamita. So let's say you can line up a series of beds to move the mace by effectively rolling the body from one bed onto another bed, rolling the body again, let's say, from one bed onto the bed next to that. And in so doing, you're never directly picking up the mace and moving the mace, but moving the mace in an indirect sort of manner. That would be acceptable. Kevan de latzarech dover hamutter hu, since this is for the purpose of that which is mutter, therefore, Kevan de latzarech dover hamutter hu. Lo hitir letatel al yidei kikar otinok el b'mace bilvad. You should know this is just there's something of an exception to the rule when it comes to a mace specifically, that if you take something that is mutter to be moved, you can actually place it on top of the mace and then go about moving the mace. That doesn't apply to anything else otherwise. But you're not allowed to do that with anything else. Ordinarily speaking, if I want to move the phone, I can't say, well, I want to move the phone. You know what I do? I'll take my Dvar Torah and I'll put my Dvar Torah on top of the phone. And now I'm not really moving the phone. I'm really moving the Dvar Torah. That's not mutter. You can't do that on Shabbos. What you can do, though, is move the item in a way that's indirect. Move it without actually directly picking it up. So taking something that's mutter and poking it or shoving it aside would be acceptable. When this is being done, one more time, kevan de letzorech davar hamutter hu, since it is for the purpose of that which is mutter, meaning to say, the mace itself is mukta, can't move a body. Why am I moving the body? So if I was moving the body, again, or just all in, at least in theory, if I was moving the body just for the sake of the body, just for the sake of, let's say, having the body in an area that I thought it was going to be better protected, so that might be problematic. But why? Because the body itself is mukta. But if I'm moving the body because I need the bed is mutter. The bed's not mukta on Shabbos. So to move the body for the purpose of the bed, that would be okay. Let's say I need this room. I need to clear out the hospital room. Let's say I need this room for the next patient, maybe. So then, why am I moving the body? I'm moving the body for the sake of the space that the body is taking up. So that's a particularly morbid and gory kind of example. But consider that when it comes to any item, to any you have your phone. So if I'm moving the phone, I don't like where the phone is. Why? Oh, the phone's sitting right there on the counter. Who knows? Baby will wake up in the morning. She'll start climbing on the counter. She'll step on the phone. The phone will get ruined. So let me move the phone. That's a problem. Even if it's being moved indirectly, even if I'm shoving it over to the side with a spoon, and the spoon is obviously mutter on Shabbos. Why? Because I'm moving it for the sake of the phone. And this is a very important distinction. When being moved for the purpose of the mukta item, movement is not acceptable, even indirect movement. But when you're moving it for the sake of, let's say, the space that it's occupying, or for, let's say, the item that it's on top of, the phone sitting on a chair, I need that chair. We got to sit in that chair today. We're having company, and that's one of the chairs that we need. So then moving, let's say, the chair or poking the phone off with a stick and letting it tumble to the floor, if that's okay, if that doesn't bother you. We're just picking up the entire chair and moving it because you need this. I have another chair, but I need the space. I need to set up another chair here. Nobody can sit on the phone. So in all those scenarios where you need the space or you need the item that the phone, that the mukta item is resting upon, it's mutter to move the mukta item aside in an indirect fashion, not by picking it up, but by poking it from the side with something else. Shulchan Aruch continues. This is a few si'ifim later in si'if ches. He says, tiltul min hatzad, he spells this all out. Tiltul min hatzad, when we move indirectly, litzorach davar hamutter, if it's for the purpose of the item that's mutter, not for the phone, but for the chair, so then it is mutter. Natalie Horowitz raised a hand. Yeah. I don't know how to, Natalie, yeah, what's up?
Yeah, so what if it's for the purpose of not being embarrassed?
I have to actually lower your hand. Okay, got it, yeah. What if it's the person not being embarrassed? What do you mean?
Like, let's
have a company over, and they're going to see that the whole place is a total mess.
No, like, even, let's say, the phone example, where, I don't know, they'll be embarrassed that the phone is out on the counter on Shabbos, and that, like, you forgot to put it away, let's say.
If it's out of embarrassment, I still think that that's needing the space or requiring the space. You're not moving it because, meaning you want the space to be free. Yeah, that example is going to be that is absolutely not okay when we speak about. I'll mention it very briefly if anybody's familiar, but don't bother yourselves if you're not familiar. When it comes to something that is a klisha malach tola iser, something that is ordinarily usually used for something that's usher on Shabbos. Let's say like a classic example. I don't know if you're familiar with this one. Classic example is a hammer. It's a classic example, though I don't think it applies really anymore, right? A hammer. Really, a hammer is usher on Shabbos because you use it to do construction and bang in nails on Shabbos, yeah? So what's the example? The example is, yeah, but you could also use a hammer to crack open a nut on Shabbos. So I'm going to have to explain to all the kids out there, back when I was like a really, really little boy, you used to be able to actually purchase nuts inside of shells. And then you would have these things called like nutcrackers and you could actually open them up. Maybe that still exists. I haven't seen that, at least not in my house, in a very, very long time. But I remember it was like a great thrill on, every now and again, even like for Pesach, we'd actually crack the walnuts ourselves. So I don't know if this resonates with anybody anymore. But in theory, picking up the hammer for the purpose of cracking the nut open, so that would be mutter. Moreover, if let's say the hammer is sitting on a chair, so then that would be not only that I need the hammer for a mutter purpose, but I need the place where the hammer resides. I need the place where the hammer is. So then I'm allowed to even move the hammer. Now, if it's just out of embarrassment, I don't like it here. I don't like the space. I don't need the space for anything. Just it's an eyesore. I don't want people coming in, and my house looks like it's not ready for Shabbos, or it just looks like a mess. So that's really not sufficient to be able to directly move something like a hammer. Again, in the coming weeks, we'll talk about what falls into that category in the first place or not. Here, when we're talking about indirect movement, I think that's acceptable. I think that's fine. I'm not moving. The point is that I'm not moving it for the purpose of the muktzah item. If I was moving it because I was concerned about the phone, you leave your pocketbook on one of like the dining room chairs or something like that. So what's the concern? So the greatest concern, aside from, oh my gosh, somebody might sit on it. Nobody's going to sit on it now. It's, you're not having any company over now. But the concern is that like all the kids are running around and you have your pocketbook right there. That's it. Like there's going to be, there's going to be like money and gum and the sucking candies or whatever, like all over the house, credit cards. The credit cards are going to come downstairs and the credit cards are going to be like built into the magnet tiles. So what do? So you want to move it to keep it safe. That's a problem. That's a problem. If it's that you're expecting company and you want the room to look a certain way, I think that's fine as long as it's tiltul min hatzad. It's more that as long as it's not for the purpose of the item itself, then that would all be okay. There's some shaila as to whether or not if you need this item even in a different space altogether, it might still be mutter. I think anyway, the example that you're speaking about would absolutely fall under the rubric of the heter. That would be acceptable. So the Mechaber says, what about, so total minatzad l'tzorech davar ha-mutter, let's say you're moving again for the purpose of the item that's mutter itself, then mutter, it's okay, hilkach, therefore. He says, tznon, a radish. I don't know why you would do this, I guess because it would preserve it without refrigeration. Tznon, if you have a radish, shenitma shetaman ba'aretz, that you covered over in dirt, again, not to like replant it, but just covered over to preserve it. Umiktas alav megulim, and some of the leaves are still poking out from above. Lo hishrish, and it also hasn't started to take root, so there's no issue of actual kotzer and uprooting a growing thing from the ground. Begamlon is kavin lizria, and the intent also isn't to actually plant, like replant it in any which way. Then notlo, you can take it out. Even though, what's going to happen when you pull the radish? You're going to move the dirt. Dirt is muktzah on Shabbos. So even though afal pishim and tilaso maziz afar mimakoma, you're going to move the dirt aside. Nevertheless, that's all acceptable because you're moving it for the purpose of the actual radish. Now, this becomes really important. I don't know that we'll get to the last couple of halachos here, but they're sort of reiterations of the same idea. But this next piece becomes really important. Until this point, we've really spoken about indirect movement with some other, for the most part, with some other object. Case in point, the Mechaber just mentioned, I'm moving dirt. Not allowed to move dirt on Shabbos. Yeah, but I'm moving dirt indirectly. I'm moving dirt by means of this vegetable that I'm holding in my hand. I'm not moving the dirt with my hand. I'm moving the dirt with the vegetable, and I'm holding the vegetable. And because I'm moving the dirt in the interest of the vegetable, not in the interest of the dirt, that's all mutter. Then we get into a different sort of tiltul min hatzad, where you are moving something in an indirect sort of fashion, and that is tiltul begufo, where you're moving it, and you're moving it with your own body, but you're actually moving it with your body in a bizarre roundabout sort of fashion. This, at least according to the Mechaber, is even more mutter, which probably makes things even easier for us. The tiltul begufo, if you're moving with your own body, then afilu litzorech davar ha'aser, even if it's for the purpose of the item that's aser, then mutter, then it's acceptable. So Hilkach, he gives an example. Kasha al hamita. Back in the day, they would have, like straw beds, mattresses, you know, made out of straw, and they would maybe spread additional straw as it starts to get depleted, so pour more straw on the bed. Now, the straw, if it's not really a mattress, if it's just raw straw, then it's mukta also. So let's say you have straw on top of the bed. The stama mukta, generally, stam straw, right, straw that's unprocessed in any which way, is mukta. It's mukta lahasaka. It really is set aside for kindling. What does he do? Mina'aneo bugufo. If he doesn't want it on his bed, then he can shake it off with his guf. He can scrape it off with his foot or her foot. By the way, just worth knowing, if it was placed on the bed while it was still Friday, kar okeses mina'aneo afilo biyado sharihichino miba odyom lishkovalav. If you place it there for the purpose of serving as like a sheet or a cushion or a pillow, and that's the intention that you had when you placed it there, and it was there even from earlier, then it's fine. Then we say that it's no longer mukta at all. But let's assume that it still is mukta. Here's the chiddush. The chiddush is that it is permissible for me to move that item with some other part of my body, even for the purpose of the item itself, if I'm not moving it with another object, but if I'm moving it with my body, but in an unusual fashion. Let's go back to the case of a pocketbook on a dining room chair. So as long as there's nothing fragile inside, even if it might be the case, you know, I'm really concerned. I'm concerned that if I leave this here, it's going to end up being all over the house. All the contents are going to be like strewn all over the place, and it's going to be a wreck. So my interest is not so much in preserving the chair or making the chair usable. No company coming today. I don't care what the room looks like. I don't even need a chair. It's just going to be a few of us. I don't need the space. What I need is for that pocketbook to be protected. Somehow or another, my wallet ends up on the floor. I see my phone on the floor. Who knows how it got there, but I'm concerned. I'm worried. I'm worried about it getting ruined while it's in its present state. I can kick it. I can kick it to wherever I want. I can kick it into the bathroom, and I can kick it into my closet. I can kick it off the bed, and I can kick it off the dining room chair, and I could, you know, schlep it along with my foot and drag it up the stairs. Any which way that would be considered to be tiltul begufo in such a manner that it's not actually being done in the normal, direct kind of fashion. All of that would actually be acceptable. So that is a very, very important catch-all. Much of our actual practical muktzah issues will be solved if we're aware of this piece of information. It's still worth knowing what exactly is mukta and what's not mukta. What do I have to be concerned about in the first place? What are the different categories? How does something become mukta? What in my house do I need to, can I just move directly? And when do I have to employ some of these tactics? But these couple of tactics are really worth their weight in gold when it comes to mukta. Just bear in mind that, again, along the lines of and this is why it's important to know the hashkafa ahead of time, that the Rambam says the concern that Chazal had is that you're going to spend your entire day cleaning up your garage. I'm not going to spend the entire day cleaning up the garage if I have to move everything around with my feet. I'm not going to spend the 3 hours of Shabbos afternoon rearranging my tools if I have to grab them all between my elbows in order to move them from point A to point B. It's just not going to happen. So I'm still going to maintain and preserve that sense of rest. And I'm also doing it in a bizarre enough fashion that it becomes so inefficient that I'm not likely going to engage in this for too long. And furthermore, I'm not going to do any malacha either. Whoever heard of, if you're telling me that the way that I have to get the phone across the room into my closet is by kicking it along the floor, I'm not gonna like shoot a text or a WhatsApp with my pinky toe. It's just not gonna happen. So because we go about doing it in a bizarre, roundabout, inefficient kind of manner, really it still preserves exactly what we're attempting to preserve by instituting mukta in the first place. So this is something of a heter, but hopefully we don't view it as, you know, too much of a real genuine loophole. Okay, so some very, very important exceptions to the rules. Before we actually begin with the rules in Amir Hashem, we'll get into some of those rules next time. Shkayach, everyone. Thanks very much for joining. I'm going to hop off so I can make it to the daf. If anybody has any practical questions, obviously always feel free to email. But hope everybody's doing well and keep strong. Hope to see everybody again in person very soon. All the best.
Thank you.
Be well, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.